Good morning. Can you hear me? So I'm going to talk about a small-scale study that was done in the Hartford, Connecticut area that displays what happens when there isn't effective regulation of flavored tobacco products. And also, I want to express my appreciation to the first paper because I think you've given us a blueprint for ways that we can begin to tackle this problem in Connecticut. There we go. Okay, so this work, actually, I'm going to start in a different place. This gives a little bit of the history of this particular paper from the point of view of context, general context, but actually this work began in India, where we were doing a study of smokeless tobacco use among women, limited resource women in the city of Mumbai. And in that setting, we discovered that women were using very many types of flavored smokeless tobacco products. And so we realized that it was very important not only to look at what people were using, but where they got it and how the products were being marketed. So essentially, I was working with colleagues in Connecticut who were focused on e-cigarettes and menthol and doing clinical studies, and we do field studies. And so we thought we might try some of the methodology that we had learned to implement in India, in Connecticut, and to focus on cigars, because earlier work in ATOD with the young adults was showing that cigars were present. They were used, of course, they were used as blunts, as conveyors for marijuana, but they were also used for a variety of other recreational purposes that I never picked up because I was looking at ecstasy and other kinds of things. So we thought we would look at what was happening in this area of flavored cigars, and I have to say that we were very surprised at some things and not surprised at others. So first we'll look at how flavored cigars are marketed in a situation which there's really no control. There is surveillance, but it's not functioning very effectively, so there's really no control over how many products, what products, where they're displayed, and so on in our setting. Then have a look at the way a small sample of cigar smokers associate ideas and concepts and preference with flavored cigars, look at some risky use patterns, and look at implications. So this was a small pilot study. My colleague Alicia Fleming did the bulk of the field research. She was a young African-American woman fresh out of college, and she was very familiar from the north end of Hartford, very familiar with the neighborhoods of the city, and anxious to kind of get her feet wet in doing some research before she went back to school. So we developed a two-stage process in which we put together a plan for essentially scans for product diversity and accessibility and cost, and then a plan for in-depth interviews with a sample of 32 young adults on their various aspects of their cigar use, where they got it, how they preferred it, and so on. The area that we focused on for the first phase of the study was in, you probably can't see the name of the towns, but it's basically in the central Connecticut area, mostly in and around Hartford. Hartford is the capital of our state, and it historically has been one of the poorest cities in the country. It's highly varied by neighborhood, which makes it interesting for these kinds of studies, because different products are marketed and accessible in different ways in different neighborhoods. And then we thought we would look at some of the suburban areas, and so north and south and east and west of the city. And for this work, because we had very limited resources, we concentrated on the major arteries where most of the commercial establishments that might be selling tobacco were located. So first of all, we identified the towns. Secondly, we identified, we knew the city. I have lived in this area for many years, so we both knew the city and surrounding areas very well. So we identified some of the major traffic, sort of main streets and highways that ran through the towns that we selected. Then identified clusters of shops in commercial areas, and then selected from those clusters and different types of shops in those clusters to do unobtrusive observations and counts. The towns you can see were five, Hartford, and then north, one town north, one town east, west, and southwest, with different sort of distributions of populations and college campuses and so on. We looked at just the initial scans showed that flavored tobacco products were sold in seven different types of points of sale. You can see them here. And in our the areas that we targeted, we saw 87. There are hundreds more. But the places that sold tobacco were convenience stores, liquor stores, discount drug stores. CVS is no longer selling them, but it did last year. Supermarkets, gas stations, tobacco shops, of which there are relatively few, and specialized shops, mostly shops that sell marijuana paraphernalia. So this is the location. It's a simple Google map of where the locations were that surveillance was conducted. And if for this part of the study, all of the shops in the clusters were visited, and then selected shops were chosen to observe. In the observations, as much as possible, all the products were photographed in the display areas and counted and documented, and a matrix was created with pictures of the products and counts for each of the shops. And samples were collected, so we had a kind of a museum of score. But we wanted those samples because we wanted to ask our subsample of young people what their preferences were and how they related to the packaging and so on. We were interested in packaging. We then described the stores and the store settings, and repeated observations. We're looking for new products. These products change all the time. Because they're catering to, you know, people get tired of the same product, so they package the same product in a different package. So just some examples of displays. I'm sure, you know, if you really look carefully, go into your corner store in an area that's not regulated, and you'll literally see, you know, 50 different types of tobaccos, usually behind the counter, but associated with products that are lookalikes, in front of the counter, candy, sometimes e-cigarettes are brought in, and behind glass, right in front of the flavored other tobacco products and so on. So it's really worth an ethnographic study to see how the distributors position with the shopkeepers to maximize the purchase of the tobacco products. Here's another example of different types of products. And you can't see at the bottom. You can see this is a snack shop, but underneath it says cigars, cigarillos. It was in a Hispanic neighborhood. This is just one of the lists of products. If I showed you all of them, we'd be taking half of the day. But these products are, they're not really organized by by brand, that is by major brand. You know, there are levels and levels and levels of these products. Those in red are those that young people in our in-depth interviews mentioned as using, and the others were available, but our sample was very small, so because they were there, it's likely that those were also being purchased and used. And if you want this list, it'll be posted, so, and many others that we have. In terms of the overall count, there were 18 types of large cigars, that half of them flavored. Small cigars and cigarillos were all flavored, and there were 33 different brands of those, and then varieties within the brands. Wraps, people don't usually mention wraps, but wraps are cigar, they're cigar leaves that are flavored and sold in packets, and they're used for wrapping weed or, you know, tobacco, but mostly marijuana. And then other kinds of vaporized tobacco products, which also were 100% flavored. The appeals included price, smell and taste, gendered imaging, the size of the packet, and packaging. Different people, it's very easy to buy a single cigar, small cigar, so if you can't buy single cigarettes, you can. So depending on how many people wanted to buy, the nature of the packaging is important because it needs to keep the product fresh. So in India, for example, they tried to stop flavored tobacco use by packaging in paper packets instead of plastic packets, and under the guise of preventing pollution, because people just dropped their packets on the street. And it failed because the tobacco companies started selling in larger paper packets, and people were storing them at home themselves and actually using more. So it's very tricky. Anyway, color was also important, and friability is also important because if you're smoking a cigar and you want to keep it, you don't want it to break, burn speed, and if the if musicians, rap musicians in particular, mentioned the cigar brand. The costs were very low, so anybody with a dollar in their pocket could easily walk into a shop. Sometimes age is checked, sometimes it isn't checked. It depends on the location and so on. And the variety, obviously the variety appeals to many different groups, young women, older women, young and older men and so on, African Americans, Latinos. And the locations make the products easily accessible. I thought you might be interested in the tobacco manufacturers. They are not U.S. necessarily. They are British. It's hard to trace back, actually. You have to really work to see who's who's what the major companies are. But they're very much British. The Dominican Republic is producing the tobacco for the one, you know, next to the bottom, but it's coming in through the port of New York and then being distributed around the country. So this is a study in and of itself. Sweden is very much interested in selling tobacco internationally and so on. So what did we find? More marketing and distribution in Hartford of flavored tobacco products and greater accessibility in Hartford, many more shops in Hartford, packaging minority specific. And so you can see the ranking on the right-hand side from Hartford East, then West, and then North, and then Southwest. So the in-depth interviews were about 60 minutes. The young people who were interviewed were found by eliciting through flyers, talking with the many organizations that we know that are working with young people. They were all volunteers, they were all cigar smokers, and they were 18 to 30 years old. We had two people who were 50 years old, and they had very interesting tobacco use histories, but we excluded them. The ethnic racial distribution, as you can see, was primarily Latino and African American, but there were a few white Caucasian young people as well, and other is usually mixed. So we asked them to associate cigars with, we just said, think of cigars and associate cigars with whatever comes to mind. And we gave them a list of, we had a piece of paper with cigar in the middle and then 10 circles, and they moved around the circle from 1 to 10 with the idea that we might do a consensus analysis at some point, which we couldn't do because the sample size wasn't large enough. But this is the ranking of associations with cigars. Taste and smell first, very important. Obviously for this study, but also because some people are super tasters, very sensitive to the bitterness of tobacco, so the sweetness masks it, and it makes for a much easier use of tobacco. Then association with cigarettes, alcohol, anxiety, stress was a major factor, pleasure, some of the other things that you would imagine, but marijuana, weed was not high on the list, interestingly, and the negative associations were lowest. So here's a cloud, which is. So in this group of 32 people, 28 of them said they used flavored cigars. Others said they used other types of cigars. It was not uncommon to use both flavored and unflavored cigars. People prefer flavoring for the reasons that you can see there. They're sweeter, smoother. Smoothness is an issue. The burning in the throat is not popular. The preferred flavors were those that you can see, struck fruit and then cream, wine, and vanilla, but there were other preferences as well. Mango was the preferred e-product taste, and people reported they didn't like cigar wrappers and paper wraps because they couldn't get a high or it didn't have a flavor, so they weren't bought much. The main reasons were first and foremost emotional. People were self-medicating with that, as they said, by smoking, and they cited a number of examples where things happened in their lives, and they smoked after that. But so much of the smoking was associated with weed that it probably was a combined, looking for a combined effect. Price, routine, weight loss came up quite a bit. Taste and smell again, and then helping people to sleep, which is also related to stress, and disliking cigarettes. So in this population, cigarettes were smoked but weren't popular. So in looking at polytobacco use, which is very important, cigar smokers, everyone probably knows, are usually polytobacco users. And the tobaccos may be, some people were using four or five different types of tobaccos. How much? Oh, that's fine, I'm new. Okay. If someone is a polytobacco user using four or five different types of tobaccos, that doesn't always mean they use them every single day, but it does mean that people can ingest quite a bit of tobacco over the course of a single 12-hour period. So you can see that 50% use from three to five types of tobacco in this small sample. And that can include multiple brands as well. And then, of course, there were those who were smoking as if they were smoking cigarettes, so they smoked many during the course of the day. The association between flavored cigars and marijuana was very strong. So two-thirds of the sample smoked weed, but not necessarily in association with all of the cigars that they smoked. Some added extra tobacco into their cigar and marijuana product. And that was interesting. Sometimes even cigar tobacco that was purchased separately. People in this group don't like to roll with paper because of the flavor gap. We found that those that were associated with prior prison experience and Job Corps were smoking far less. So when in the absence of other forms of cessation programs, these two institutional experiences act as an opportunity, not necessarily the best, but an opportunity to quit. Tobacco is not always associated with alcohol, but among those who are drinking alcohol, cigars are often present and use increases with drinking. So that association between cigar use, the social context of cigar use, and drinking is important. We can't really separate them if we want to think about prevention. Just to sum up, flavored tobacco, the market is very substantial. It tends to be concentrated in urban areas. The focus is on taste and smell, which have really high appeal. And language and cultural practices and norms endorse use. There's not much negative language in the interviews in terms of concerns over health issues. Or if there is a mention of health issues, it really is not applied personally. So the question of risk and whether risk labels on packaging make a difference, we didn't see risk labels that on the packaging, although they probably were there but small, so they're not mentioned. And in our state, we're one of the states that has just passed a law authorizing the sale of medical marijuana. So one of our questions has to do with the increased availability of marijuana. We don't know what that's going to do either to sale on the street or to sale, period, and whether it will increase tobacco use because of the use of cigars as a vehicle for a conveyance vehicle. So our message here, and I think the implications for next steps are to get people to really focus on the implications of flavored cigar use and polytobacco use, to prevent sales, to increase taxes on cigars. The cost is low. We need to do that. To legislate plain packaging. Obviously, there's no plain packaging of cigars at this point. To counter positive cultural norms and to promote, at least to promote the use of other conveyances for marijuana. I think we're going to see recreational marijuana use fairly soon in Connecticut, so we should get started on that. And the issue of prevention and cessation is really critical in an environment like this. So I will end with this and take any questions.